on BOA1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins and Anna Mateo. Later, Phil Dierking and Dorothy Gundy will bring us the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, 88-year-old Robert Seaman has been drawing since he was a boy. At age 60, he left his job selling houses and other properties to take up his hobby professionally. But it took the coronavirus pandemic to fully return him to what he loved to do. Seaman said, as a child, he sometimes liked to keep to himself and sometimes was an extrovert. He added, "But in my introvert phase, I would love to go up to my room where I had a drawing table kind of desk, and I'd spend hours up there drawing pictures. That's what I'm doing now." Seaman recently marked 1 year since he started drawing what he calls his daily doodles. He lives at the Maplewood Assisted Living Center in Westmoreland, New Hampshire. He spends about 6 hours a day working on his doodles. He starts his drawings in pencil. He then finishes them with ink, colored pencil, and watercolor. "After a long life, I'm back doing what I did when I was 11 years old," he said. "And it's great. I love it. I'm so lucky that I can do this." Seaman moved into Maplewood just 2 weeks before pandemic restrictions cut residents off from the outside world. For many months, they could not leave their rooms. It was only recently that they were permitted to interact in common areas without masks. "The first thought I had was to just do some kind of dark stuff that reflected the nature of the confinement that we were experiencing and the difficulties that were created by this pandemic," he said. "Then it just started to grow, and I thought it would be interesting to do one a day." He started sending the doodles to his daughter, Robin Hayes, and other friends and family. Hayes then shared them on Facebook. As interest grew, she began offering the drawings and prints for sale online. Half of the money earned was donated to causes, including a COVID-19 aid program, a homeless shelter, and an organization that helps refugees. As the days passed, Seaman's art got brighter in both subject matter and appearance. Some pieces show his interest in science fiction. Other drawings have playful images of animals or show his sense of humor. One drawing, Portraits of a Shy Family, shows framed paintings of the backs of people's heads. A much-loved cat, Piper, shows up in many other drawings. Seaman says he will probably kick the bucket before he runs out of ideas. To kick the bucket is an expression that means to die. Seaman added, "I might be watching something on television, and someone will have a picture on the wall that will give me an idea. When I go to sleep at night, for a few minutes, I try to think of some new ideas." Doodle number 365, called Potpourri, shows the earth behind other objects. They include his cat Piper, a mechanical bird Seaman keeps on his desk, a horse, and a man wearing a hat and eyewear. It is framed by a series of shapes that look like calligraphy, but are not actual letters. Seaman said he has no plans to stop drawing. It keeps me occupied, and I love doing it, but it also does help some other people, which is kind of nice, he said.
China's ruling Communist Party has found a new way to shape public opinion around the world, Western social media. Not long after taking power in 2013, Chinese President Xi Jinping called it the main battlefield for public opinion. He added that winning the battle was related to the country's ideological and political security. Websites like Twitter and Facebook are banned in China. However, they have become a path for the Chinese government to share its messages with the world. And many of the accounts have been found to be set up under false names. Liu Xiaoming is a former ambassador from China to Britain. He joined Twitter in October 2019, along with many other Chinese diplomats. Liu has gained 119,000 followers since October. He is an example of China's wolf warrior diplomats who aggressively fight anti-Chinese critics. His posts were retweeted more than 43,000 times from June through February alone. But much of the popular support Liu and many other Chinese officials seem to enjoy on Twitter has been manufactured. The Associated Press and Britain's Oxford University performed a 7-month investigation on Chinese social media accounts. They found that China's rise on Twitter was due to the tens of thousands of retweets from fake accounts. In other words, the accounts were not set up by real users. Around 150,000 users shared messages from Chinese diplomats between June and January. But nearly half of all shares come from just 1% of accounts. Together, these accounts shared the messages 360,000 times, often within seconds. These retweets share Chinese propaganda to hundreds of millions of people. They often do not say that the content is government-backed. In the same period, more than half of Liu's retweets came from accounts that Twitter has suspended. Twitter will suspend accounts if they find they unfairly influence the site. But it usually comes after weeks or months of activity. The AP investigation found that 26,879 accounts retweeted nearly 200,000 times before they were suspended. Twitter told the AP that it is investigating whether the accounts were part of a state-sponsored information operation. The company said it will release what they find and remove the accounts if it is true. However, China simply creates more fake accounts once they are suspended. Many of the accounts use stolen British citizens' identities. The number of fake followers and shares can increase the status of China's messengers. They make it seem like there is large support for their message. Twitter will also share popular posts with more individuals. This increases the chances someone will be exposed to Chinese government propaganda. In an effort to provide users with more information, Twitter last year began labeling accounts belonging to key government officials and state-affiliated media. However, only 14% of Chinese diplomatic accounts had been labeled by March first. Twitter has also failed to label Chinese officials' accounts as verified. The China Media Project is a Hong Kong research group. It found that Twitter users liked and shared fewer messages from Chinese news organizations after they had been labeled as state-affiliated media. And Twitter also stopped suggesting the messages and the accounts to users. The editor of China's Global Times said the China state-affiliated media label on his account had an immediate effect. He tweeted, "It seems Twitter will eventually choke my account." China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the country uses social media the same way other nations do. It said its use of social media is for deepening friendly ties and making fact-based communication. Jacob Wallace is a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute's International Cyber Policy Center. He said China's use of social media is creating problems for Western democracies. He explained that Western democracies do not have the same ability to influence opinion in China since the country has walled off its internet. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Every 17 years, billions of insects, known as the cicadas of Brood 10, rise from the earth. This year, perhaps, there will be trillions. Different broods or groups of cicadas come out on different years. The last time Brood 10 appeared was in 2004. The brood is one of the largest and will appear sometime in May in 15 states from Georgia in the south to New York in the northeast. Many scientists and insect lovers say they are looking forward to the red-eyed insects after a 17-year wait. One of them is Mike Raup, an insect expert at the University of Maryland.
What they're waiting for is the soil temperatures to reach about 18 degrees Celsius. I believe that's 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Then they're going to be up and out of the ground.
Raup called the event a party on the treetops. When the insects come out of the ground, they will drop their skin, get their wings, and will try to go up on the treetops to escape from predators. Raup told VOA every creature will want to eat a cicada, and they will.
On that night of emergence, when the cicadas come up from the earth, everything on the planet is going to want to eat a cicada.
Once on the treetops, the male cicadas will sing their mating songs to draw the females. And it is loud. If she likes the singing, they will have sex and reproduce. About 6 weeks later, the nymphs will fall off the treetops and go into the ground. Underfoot, the insects will quietly feed off tree roots and wait for another 17 years to start the party on the treetops all over again.
I think the periodical cicadas give tens of millions of people an opportunity to simply go out in their backyard and witness and enjoy a natural event that happens nowhere else on the planet, only a handful of times in a lifetime.
Raup explained that some cicadas appear every year, but they have a much shorter life cycle and stay alive in two ways. They are green and can hide in nature. Also, they can fly very fast. So they avoid being captured by predators. Periodical cicadas, like Brood 10, do not have either of those life-saving methods. To continue the species, he said billions of periodical cicadas will appear all at the same time, so their predators cannot eat all of them. Also, by coming out every 17 years, they are not a dependable food source for predators, and simply outlive them. Some people might be afraid of Brood 10 or concerned about the noise. Raup advised it may help to think of the similarities between Brood 10 and people.
You know, this past year for humans has been a year of many challenges, right? We've had COVID, we've had social unrest. But now, with the vaccines, with restrictions being lifted, people are getting outside again. There's no longer social distancing. They're having fun with their friends. Now, think about the cicadas. They've been underground for 17 years, social distancing. They're not hanging out together. And just like us, this spring in May, they're coming up and out of the ground. They're going to go to the treetops. They're going to have fun.
For those feeling even braver, a student at the University of Maryland, Jenna Jaden, wrote a book in 2004 to give cooking directions for eating cicadas. In Cicadalicious, Cooking and Enjoying Periodical Cicadas, she suggests eating only newly emerged cicadas, whose outer bodies have not hardened. Boil them for about 4 to 5 minutes. Remove the hard parts, the wings and the legs. They will not hurt you, she writes, but they are not that tasty. Then you can fry them in seasonings. Raup and other experts warn that people should talk to their doctor before eating any insect. He also suggests that those people who are afraid of cicadas think of them this way.
Yes, I think everybody feels that it's a new day. It's a new day for us. It certainly is going to be a new and wonderful day for cicadas. So I think we have a lot to look forward to.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
This week, in our national parks journey, we explore a vast area with mountains, beaches, forests, and glaciers. The area's huge range in both rainfall and elevation make it one of the most diverse parks in America. Welcome to Olympic National Park. The park is located in the western state of Washington. It is on the Olympic Peninsula in the northwest part of the state. The park covers more than 400,000 hectares. It has several different ecosystems. Visitors will find temperate rainforests, glacier-covered mountains, and almost 120 kilometers of wild coastline.
The Olympic Peninsula has seen travelers from many countries throughout history, including Mexico, Spain, France, Russia, and England. Many travelers from these countries arrived in the late 1700s. They were searching for the Northwest Passage. The sea route connects the Northern Atlantic and Pacific Oceans by way of the Arctic Ocean. These explorers all claimed to discover different parts of what is now Olympic National Park. In 1792, English Captain George Vancouver explored the peninsula in great detail by boat. He named many of the natural features in the area. Later, people began moving west across North America to search for gold. This era was known as the Gold Rush. Many people came to the western United States in search of gold. At the time, the Olympic Peninsula was not very developed and did not have roads. People had to travel by boat or horse to explore the peninsula.
Early settlers reached the Olympic Peninsula in the mid-1800s. At first, people built homes on the coast. This area was easier to access and had good land for farming. Life on the Olympic Peninsula was difficult, however. People lived far from large cities and resources. They cut trees to build cabins. They also hunted and fished for food. Later, people started making expeditions into the center of the peninsula. They explored its forests and mountains. These areas never became very populated, however. To protect the nature of the area, President Grover Cleveland declared the Olympic Peninsula's forests as the Olympic Forest Reserve in 1897. And in 1938, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the bill that established the Olympic National Park.
Eight Native American tribes are closely connected to the area. One tribe, the Macaw, has a long history of whaling. The U.S. bans whaling, but the Macaw tribe is permitted to continue practicing this tradition in small amounts. American courts also gave Native American tribes the right to continue their traditional fishing practices in the area. Protecting fish resources is important to the Native Americans living on the Olympic Peninsula. They work with the National Park Service to protect the area's natural resources.
Olympic National Park has meadows and lakes. It has glacier-fed rivers and mountain peaks that rise more than 2,300 meters. Each area of the park offers visitors something special. The Elwha Valley is in the central part of the park. It is the Olympic Peninsula's largest watershed. A watershed is an area of land that separates waters that flow to different rivers or seas. Long ago, the rivers in this area held the most salmon outside of Alaska. The area also was home to bears, eagles, cougars, and the Tlalum Native Americans. In the 1920s, a growing community of settlers built two hydroelectric dams to provide energy for the local economy. The dams created many problems for the river. They decreased the water in the rivers, which caused the fish population in the area to decrease. This affected the other animals that depended on fish for food. The community later decided to fix these problems. In 1992, Congress passed the Elwha River Ecosystem and Fisheries Restoration Act. Both dams have been removed, and the National Park Service is using fish hatcheries to increase the salmon population. Today, the Elwha River is the site of one of the largest ecosystem restoration projects in National Park Service history.
The Ho River is on the west side of the park. The river is formed from melted glacial ice on top of Mount Olympus. The river is 80 kilometers long. It empties into the Pacific Ocean. The area receives about 400 centimeters of rain each year. It is a temperate rainforest. Because of the amount of rain, many different types of plants grow in the Ho rainforest, from mosses and ferns to huge Sitka spruce trees. The Ho River Valley is protected from any logging or development. Hurricane Ridge is a mountain area in the northern part of the park. It is easy to enter and provides incredible views of the Olympic Mountains. The ridge has many hiking paths. In winter, people come here to ski. They also come here to take part in other fun winter activities like sledding and snowboarding. Hurricane Ridge usually has snow from December through the end of March. Visitors must be prepared for icy roads and severe weather.
The westernmost part of the park is Pacific coastline. Olympic National Park has many breathtaking beaches. Rialto Beach is known for its tall sea stacks. These formations are tall towers of rock standing in the sea. North of Rialto Beach is Hole in the Wall. It is a natural arch that has been carved by the powerful sea. Claylike Beach is known for its white sand. It also has three national wildlife refuges, which protect the area's bird and fish species. The coastline areas offer hiking and camping. They are some of the most popular places in the park.
Olympic National Park offers difficult mountain hikes. It offers relaxing beaches and exciting walks through lush rainforests. There is truly something for everyone at Olympic National Park. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.